Please go ahead. The recording is now started.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. This is the IRTP call, and it is Tuesday, the 24th of August. On the call, we have Bob Mountain, Michael Collins, yes, Mikey O'Connor, Barry Cobb, James Bladel, Simonetta Batiga, and Bodwan Zombies. For staff, we have Deponic and Glenda Saint-Gerie, and we have from Michele Nilon and Barbara Steele. Would you please remember to say your name for speaking for transcription purposes? And Chris Chaplow and Kevin Atman have just joined the call. Thank you, James. Over to you.
Thank you, Glenn, and good morning, good day to everyone. This is the IRTP Part B working group meeting for August 24th. Michele is unavailable today and has asked me to cover for him on this call and facilitate the discussion. But certainly that's not an inside deal. If anyone would like to ask me to step aside and take the reins, I would certainly not stand in the way of that as well. But not seeing any hands, I'll just assume that we're clear to go forward. There was an agenda sent by Marika, I believe, yesterday, and it is posted there in the Adobe chat in the note box. Now that we've called the roll, we can begin on item number two, and that is feedback from ICANN Compliance or ICANN Legal regarding charter question E. And just as a refresher, Kelly had asked ICANN staff to go back and prepare some discussion or give us some additional supporting information on the problems associated with reason for denial 7 as it currently reads. So I'll just turn that over to Marika and have her give us that update.
Yeah, this is Marika. The update that was circulated yesterday to the mailing list, you see that as well on the Adobe Connect. And I think you might have seen as well that several people already made some comments to that. I'm having some further discussions based on the comments that were received, and I think there's going to be some follow-up from our side, but we need a little bit more time as, you know, we're talking between different time zones to get our response together. So maybe we can defer this to the next meeting so I can post that to the mailing list and we can have some further discussion first, if that would be acceptable by the working group.
I think it's acceptable, but I wanted to open the floor if there was anyone that had any urgent or strong feelings they would like to discuss today. But the queue appears to be empty, so I think that we can defer that to the next meeting.
James?
Oh, there's Paul.
Hey, James. Thanks.
There's
Paul Diaz. Marika, in your back and forth with ICANN Legal, would you please get clarification around the points that Rob and I were making in terms of denial reason 7? The recommendation was just to strike it. That, to me, seems throwing the baby out with the bathwater. Would you please specifically ask them, is it a question? One thing I've heard repeatedly in this group is that there's, you know, confusion, there's lack of clarification, et cetera. In the terms, looking at number 7, I could imagine people saying, because they talk about existing locks and suggested adding something like EPP consistent locks, would that make Legal happier? Do they feel that that's a clarification? It just struck me as very surprising that they were saying throw the whole thing out because it's already dealt with elsewhere. I definitely would like to see some more clarification. What is their rationale? What is their thinking there? And would the suggested text that I thrown in kind of get us going in the direction that they were hoping for, something short of striking the provision completely?
Okay, Marika, you want to respond before we go to Mikey?
Yes, this is Marika again. I'll definitely take that back, but I just wanted to note as well that I think the comment on possibly striking that provision should be seen in conjunction with points 3 and 4, because I think the understanding is that if that provision would be taken out, it might be more helpful to have another provision that might be more clear and indeed talks about how to lock and unlock domains. But I'll definitely get more clarification and feedback to the group on that.
Okay, thank you, Marika. And looks like Paul agrees. Mikey?
This is Mikey. Thanks, James. I just wanted to chime in right behind Paul on that. And I also wanted to say that I really like the kind of Zen-like precision of Paul's suggested amendment. You know, I'm not sure that it's, you know, I have to defer to others as to whether it's precisely the right amendment, but it certainly works in terms of clarifying and highlighting, I think, the issue there. So, mostly just the Me Too kind of comment, but it's almost as though, Marika, the 5 points that you've got listed, is this like a summary of comments from different people? Because they seem like they're a bit inconsistent, and I was thinking maybe that's because number 2 sort of startled me, too. I was reading along and found that one to be like maybe from a different person or something like that.
So this is Marika. This is a combination of feedback that was gathered from compliance and legal. And I think on comment 2, and that's something, you know, we're discussing a bit internally in further detail, I think that comes partly from the understanding that, you know, whether that denial reason was intended originally to just relate to registry lock, the EPP registry lock. So we're having some further discussions on where, you know, where the assumption might come from. So we need a bit more time to, you know, get our thoughts together and hopefully get that back to the working group shortly.
Okay, thank you. Any other discussion on this issue? Okay, then I think that we can defer until next week, and we'll await some further clarifications on that, Marika. Thank you. So moving on to agenda item number 3 is we begin to dive in an examination of the public comments received on the initial report, and I believe these are also comments and feedback received during the Brussels meeting as well. Is that correct, Marika?
Yes, this is Marika. That's correct. What I've tried to do in this grid is to combine the comments that we listed at an earlier date of the comments that we received during the public session we had in Brussels on initial report, as well as the comments that were received as part of the public comment period. And I've tried to group them together in the different categories linked to the charter questions and some general comments up front. And I would like to encourage everyone to have a look at this document and, you know, look as well at the same time at the different submissions that were made to make sure that there's nothing missing. And if you feel that any, you know, comments should be included here or some, you know, crucial information is missing from the summary, you know, to please let me know so I can update this document accordingly.
Okay, thank you. I think it was a good idea to combine those and organize them, catalog them by topic. So if there are no objections from the group, we can begin to take a look at these in closer detail. And I think that we can start with Section 1, the general comments of Marika's chart that is in the Adobe, for those of you on Adobe Connect, that is in the main window there. So would you like to read through them, Marika, or should I?
As you want. I see that Paul has raised his hand first.
Yes, Paul, go ahead.
Thanks. This is Paul Diaz. I don't want to get ahead of us. Just a question for the group as we start reading through the general comments, in particular number 1, little history lesson. When IRTP was developed, the community, the people who participated in that working group, made it very, very clear that they wanted the system we have today, a system whereby when a transfer request is made, there's no longer a requirement for an affirmative consent for the name to be transferred. In other words, the losing registrar no longer has to receive affirmative consent from the registrar before the name goes out. It was controversial. What the heck is that on the background? Anyway, it was very controversial at the time. My registrar has on many occasions said, you know, we disagree with it. But I asked the group now, we're dealing with today's reality. It's 5 years down the road since the policy, almost six. The point that is being made by Mr. Williams, number one, have things changed? Do people want basically to go back to where we were, where there now needs to be that affirmation of intent to transfer? And does the registrar have a role to play in seeking or receiving that affirmation before a name is allowed to be released, as opposed to today's 5 days and then it goes? It's just something to think about, everybody, because if folks like what they see in number one, understand that it will be undoing or potentially overturning what was a very specifically negotiated point in today's IRTP.
Okay, thank you, Paul. And Bob is next, and I put myself in the queue as well.
Yeah, this is Bob Mountain. Paul, would that then be a, it sounds like that would be a problem for any kind of fast transfer system. Am I interpreting that correctly?
Fast in what way, Bob?
Or a fast transfer system where a domain is like in an aftermarket environment where a domain is then put into some kind of market. If it's sold, the domain is then transferred without further involvement from the registrant, who would be a voluntary seller. If the registrant is then inserted into the process and must approve, would that then kind of eliminate the possibility of fast transfer?
I suspect it would, Bob, and the kind of process you described didn't exist 6 years ago when IRTP was crafted, so that's another issue to consider.
Yeah, so if that's the case, and it sounds like it is, then I think, you know, we would certainly have a problem with point one.
Okay, thank you, Bob. Mike, what's your go ahead?
Oh, thanks, James. This is just sort of a dumb question, but isn't that the auth code cycle? Isn't that what doesn't the registrant already have the capability? I didn't understand this one. That isn't the registrant already involved in the transfer process? What are they describing here?
Can I jump in, James?
Yeah, go ahead, Paul.
It's Paul again. I think here, Mikey, we're dealing with the admin contact can initiate a request for transfer, whereas the registrant may not be involved. And the current policy does not require the registrant's involvement. In other words, the request can be made by the admin. They can receive auth info code. The whole thing can happen. The registrant's out of the loop. After the fact, the registrant goes, whoa, I didn't authorize that. And then we have the other sorts of problems that this group's been looking at. Again, it's different. When we go back in time, it used to be that the registrant had to be more actively involved, and that was changed 6 years ago.
Got it. Thanks.
And I was just going to very quickly raise the possibility that we're discussing an active versus a passive approval process, Paul, because if I did question if a name transferred from, for example, from GoDaddy to Network Solutions, and I had a question of that, I could request, make a formal request that Network Solutions document the form of authorization. It's not something that's required for the transfer. It happens after the fact, and it is something that has to be proactively requested as opposed to receiving it by default. But that is still a part of the process, just in a watered-down fashion.
Definitely, James, and it's Paul again. My only point with this, and I'm sorry if I've jumped the gun, we probably should have read through it first. It just struck me reading Mr. Williams' point from the general comments, the number one point, that he is advocating a return to the old system. And things like FOAs and the processes that we've learned to live with now, a lot of those did not exist prior. And I just want the group to think about these as they go through. If there's any sympathy for the point made in number one, understand that there's a lot of implications, a lot of potential unintended consequences that we'll have to deal with.
And the original policy, if I'm not mistaken, was constructed in its current form because they didn't want there to be it to be dependent upon any action of the losing registrar. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
Okay. Simonetta is next.
Yes. I just wanted to second what Buck Mountain was voicing before, that in our aftermarket currently already is the case that we have a lot of transfers going through where people aren't necessarily proactive in approving the transfer after they feel they've already agreed on the sale on in our platform or in some other platform. So I feel it would just delay any kind of legitimate domain sale process, and it would make an instant domain transfer process like the one that Name Media is facilitating or Fabulous is facilitating or our own really tricky to administer.
Okay, thank you. Chris?
Yes, thanks for explaining that. I missed the point that we were talking the difference between the registrant and the admin contact. But there's one little thing that keeps bugging me, and maybe somebody can put me right on this, is if there's a third party, which is actually slightly different from one of the other two, and that is the account holder, in the registrar. One, is it conceivable that the account holder is a different entity or person from the admin contact? And then if so, even if somebody clicked the box to say I'm the admin contact, maybe they're not, maybe they're somebody else. So what I'm really saying is it the account holder that in practical terms has got all the power? Does that make sense, that question?
It does make sense, Chris. And I could speak to my own experiences that there is an account holder, and it is not necessarily, although it commonly is either the registrant or the admin contact, not necessarily the case. Auth info codes are exchanged via web interface or via email or other delivery methods. So it is possible that the account holder could be what's the term of art here, an invisible hand in this process?
Yeah.
Any other registrars want to chime in on that one? Paul?
Yeah, thanks, James. It's Paul. Agree with what you've said and struggle with Chris's point there. I have the same problems in that account holder, term of art is a good expression. It is a construct by various registrars in the same way that like our registrar will talk about a primary contact. We equate that with the registrant field and but they can be different entities. I know it's frustrating. It's an artifact, a legacy of our system, but importantly, as far as policy is concerned, registrant trumps everything. So it doesn't matter your account holder, your primary contact, any other terms that may be used, the registrant of record is still going to be have the last say in a transfer issue, and typically complaining about an unauthorized transfer. So if a registrar internally equates it, great, but if not, then that entity is going to be one step below in the pecking order. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does, Paul, and thanks for the clarification that, you know, the account holder may have full access to the control panels and the configuration of the registration, but from a policy perspective, it always falls back to the registered name holder, the registrar.
Yes,
does that help address your question, Chris?
Yeah, it does. I still think I need to look at this and figure, you know, we've got these interesting words here, invisible hand and construct by registrar.
I probably shouldn't have said that. That probably has a legal connotation that I'm too ignorant to understand.
It's quite descriptive, and I think there's something we've got to explore, because at a practical level, you know, this is what hijacking is, isn't it? It's not necessarily the policy. It's people doing something to get around it. So, yeah, thanks. We can try and pick that up as another point.
Okay, thank you, Chris. Bob?
Yeah, this is Bob Mountain. I guess the question is point one differentiating between registrant and admin contact, or is it just using, you know, bundling the registrant with the admin contact and asking or requesting or suggesting that entity, that combined entity, must be involved in the transfer? I was assuming the latter, but I could have been mistaken, and he could be, if he's differentiating between the two, then that's a different point. So I guess I'm just curious, does anyone have any insight on that?
I'm reviewing Jeffrey's comment now, and I'm not sure that it's clear if he's making a distinction between registrant and admin contact, or if he's just referring to registrant.
Yeah, so I guess his point could be different depending on which one of those he meant, right?
Right. Mikey?
This is Mikey. Sort of building up on what Bob was talking about, it seems to me that, in a way, what we've got is sort of a timing problem. You know, there's one goal is speedy, convenient transfers, and another goal is safety in the event of hijacking. And also sort of folding in your point, or Paul's point about registrant trumps, we may want to make the distinction sort of the sorts of things that go on before the transfer and the things that then can happen after the transfer. You know, and this gets further down in our list of comments to the ETRP, or the rapid return thing. You know, I think that our goal is make it easy for people to transfer names when it's normal, but also make it possible for people to unwind things when malicious behavior takes place. And it seems to me that what Jeffrey is really aiming for is the safety side of things, and I don't think we want to necessarily disagree with that, but perhaps focus on which side of the transfer, before or after, the safety measures are put in place.
Okay, thank you, Mikey.
I think, to me, one of the main concerns with this was that if you allow for a quick reversal process of a domain transfer, and you have maybe players in the market who want to abuse a domain sale situation and then do basically just file for hijacking, get the domain back, and create a fraudulent situation like that. And the current proposal kind of makes that easy because the domain just goes straight back into the hands of the previous owners. So I was wondering if it might help to think about a process that doesn't automatically return the domain to the original owner, but puts it in some kind of holding account somewhere else, so that it isn't as convenient to just get the domain back into your own hands. but you'd have to get through the complete process of actually clarifying, was this domain hijacked and or was this domain sold, or what has actually happened before the domain is returned to the previous owner.
Yeah, thank you, Simonetta. And those are a lot of problems and paradoxes that I think we wrestled with when we were drafting the ETRP proposal. It was just, I think, mainly a method to get some of those ideas captured and some of the problems that and consequences that they would entail. Marika and Mikey, is that a new hand, or because we want to continue through at least this first section? So is that a new hand?
It's a new hand, but it's not a real important new hand. We'll take that one down.
Okay. We'll just go with Marika then, and we can move on to number two.
Yeah, this is Marika. Just in response to Mikey's comment on considering safety before or after the transfer, there are a number of other comments that come later down. If you look, for example, at comment 22, as well as some of the comments in relation to an irrevocable transfer process or procedure, that also probably link into that discussion of where that security or safety should take place before or after the transfer. So I presume there will be further opportunities to discuss that in further detail.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that we could probably spend as much time have healthy discussions on the comments received for ETRP than the several months that were spent crafting it in the first place. I think we can definitely dive into those types of questions when we get to that section. So if there are no further comments on issue number one, I wanted to move to the second comment received, which was that these, for Mr. Roy White, these changes are inherently dangerous to anyone who might at one time or another actually sell a domain name. And I see Marika's hand is up, and I want to put myself in the queue as well. So go ahead, Marika.
Yeah, this is Marika. I put this one in the general comments as no further details were made as to what the person was specifically referring to in the report, but I was interpreting as maybe relating to the ETRP as well, as there has been several discussions on different forums on what it might do to the aftermarket and selling of domain names websites. So the group might want to review that comment, see whether indeed it fits with the general comments or whether it actually belongs into the ETRP section, or whether it's really just a broad comment that applies to all the issues that were discussed in the report.
Okay, thank you, Marika. And I think it's fine here. It probably could also be attached to Charter Question A. I just wanted to make a comment here, and if McKelly were chair, I'd probably be a little more strident about it, but unfortunately you're going to get the more polite version of my comment. But something to the effect of, we understand that the transfer process is an integral component to the exchange of domain name registrations on the secondary market. And we've identified that process also has some vulnerabilities for the many, many millions of registrants who have no awareness or intention to participate in the secondary market. So I would just, as we go through these comments, especially as they relate to ETRP, I would just want to point out that we need to be looking for a balance. We certainly don't want to, make a recommendation that's going to upend a healthy market that a lot of folks participate in. But we certainly also cannot allow the secondary market to drive policy in the primary market. And that's just maybe a little editorializing on my part, but I think that balance, as we were discussing earlier, the balance between domain name portability and security, the balance between the commercial needs of the secondary market versus the security and integrity of the primary market, I think we just need to be mindful of all of those things. So that's my editorializing on that, and I will go to Bob, who I'm sure has something completely opposite to say.
Yeah, this is Bob Mountain. Yeah, I guess point two, the feedback I have might be better spoken in the next section, but I think it's relevant that the phrase dangerous was something that was voiced to me at a couple of conferences I've attended recently where people have come up to me about the ERTP and expressed some pretty heightened concerns about that. So I just think that word kind of keyed it off, and it has been resonating. Not a huge sample set, but the people who have spoken about it have been, very, very concerned, and would sort of, I think, mirror the sentiment in number two as it applies to ERTP. So I just want to pass that along to the group.
And those are folks in the participants in the secondary market. Would you say that was correct, Bob?
I think so. And in both cases, it was large portfolio owners who were both expressing concerns about the about that. Yeah.
Okay. So I think that this goes back to an earlier, larger question, which is the existing transfer mechanism, which was designed to allow a single registrant to express a choice of registrars, is it the most appropriate tool to exchange? Or mechanism to facilitate a transfer between registrants? And I think this is the question that's kind of underpinning all of these discussions. I don't have an answer. I think that maybe that's the way to frame the question. Michael, you're next in the queue.
Thank you, James. First, I want to say that I agree with you, James, that I think balance is required between portability and security, but between people whose primary interest is just transferring a domain name with the same registrant. And I would say that balance will be achieved if we can find a way to implement an urgent return process, at least for use of the domain name, but we also need to have a way for receiving registrants to contest, an urgent return. So I think there is a balance there. We can find a way to achieve it. But a urgent return process that doesn't include any opportunity to contest it doesn't seem balanced to me. Thanks.
Right. It starts to look more and more like a dispute mechanism, which we certainly didn't want to go off and invent. Okay. Mikey?
This is Mikey. I think one of the problems that we have with the ETRP is that...
I'm sorry, Mikey. I'm sorry to interrupt you. You're coming in very faint for me. If I'm the only one, I'll go back on mute, but is anyone else able to...
Let me reposition my mic.
Ah, much better. Thank you.
I think a lot of carrots got eaten, and I forgot to replace the microphone after that. Sorry. We did a very subtle thing when we designed the ETRP, and I think a lot of the complaints that we got in the public comment process are due to the fact that we didn't do a real good job of describing what we are proposing. And so a lot of this commentary, I think, is due to misinformation. And so I think along with rethinking the process, we also need to rethink the way we describe it, because I think it's actually better than people think it is. I don't want to go into the whole list of reasons why, but I just want to get the notion out there that a lot of this is misinformation and quite frankly inaccurate. And I think before we retool the whole ETRP, we also need to take a look at where we didn't describe it well.
Okay, thanks, Mikey, and I think that is definitely something we should be mindful of when we dive into that. Any other thoughts on Mr. White's comment? Item number two. I see the queue is empty. Oh, Matt. Oh, Matt Sterling.
Yes.
Go ahead.
I didn't have my hand up, I don't think.
No, I'm glad to see you on the call. Awesome.
Oh.
And then Chris is after you as well. So go ahead, Matt.
No, I don't have anything.
Okay. Go ahead, Chris.
Well, you're asking for comments. Roy White doesn't really give, he just states something and then doesn't give any justifying it, does it? And it's almost, to me, he's read it on a George Kirchhoff's post on a forum and just quickly posted something. You ask for comments.
Okay. My only final comment, I think, you know, dovetails back to the original discussion, which is that it's something that may be dangerous to someone who might at one time or another actually sell a domain name or a website, you know, but might be a benefit to the other side of that mirror where folks have no intention of participating. I think, you know, something to be considered as well. Okay, we've got a new queue here now for Simonetta.
I would view this not so much as dangerous for the seller of the domain name as something that I would find concerning if I'm purchasing a domain name, and there's a lot of legitimate buyers out in the market who run a risk that a name that they have purchased is getting taken away from them again in hindsight because potentially the seller was upset about something or just plain abusing his powers here. And I would second what Michael was saying earlier. There needs to be some way for a dialogue and a real opportunity for both sides in this dispute to voice their opinion and then come to a resolution and not just a automatic transfer back.
Okay, thank you. And Bob?
Yeah, Bob Mountain. The only other, and this kind of goes back a little bit to the, in reading the transcript from last week, if I had it right, between Paul and Mikey, but the proportionality of the measure. You know, I don't know what the number of incidents is that this would prevent in other, you know, marketplaces. You know, certainly our experience is that it's a little bit of overkill given that it's not a huge problem with us and the sort of other measures that we've put into place, you know, kind of invariably stop, you know, solve the problem ahead of time anyways. So I guess my point is I don't know if it's disproportionate across the board. It seems so on sort of our slice of experience. But my my suggestion would be that we look hard at that, and just because the feedback I got, you know, in addition to the people I mentioned, you know, who had come up to me about this, I think that was their other point, was that it's overkill for what they don't view in their, you know, in their opinion as a huge problem. Sort of, I think I'm not sure, it might have been George who said, you know, howitzer, the killer mosquito, or something like that. So you know, just that would be my other comment, that both my own experience and, you know, the other people who approached me about this.
Okay, thank you, Bob. Mikey.
This is Mikey. This is the, I think, misinformation problem. I was hesitating to describe it, but let me just describe real quickly the fact that the urgent return process is just that. It doesn't, however, exist in a vacuum. Basically, immediately surrounding the urgent return process is all of the existing dispute resolution processes that are already there. And the goal of the urgent return is simply to ratchet the thing back to the way it was before and then give the dispute processes that already exist, mostly between registrars, time to work. But it's not an automatic return that unwinds a deal. One of the things that I think we need to do the next time we describe the ETRP is we need to describe it in context. And I, again, don't want to go into all the context that surrounds it. But, you know, this whole premise that the ETRP can undo a legitimate sale by a disgruntled seller's remorse seller is not true. And we just need to do a better job of describing why that's the case. I don't want to go into all that now because we spent months working on this, but there is just a giant misperception out there as to how big this ETRP really is and how little, this notion that there's no dispute resolution surrounding it just isn't correct. That's all. Little rant. Sorry about that.
No, that's okay, Mikey, and I appreciate your thoughts on this. And, folks, I mean, we're spending a lot of time on this, which is justifiably jumping ahead into the next section. And in some respects, we have both skipped and violated the words of caution in comment number 3, which is that we should make sure we're focusing on all of the other issues associated with IRTPB and not just on the ETRP or the urgent return mechanism. I did want to raise a possibility here, and I know we have some folks on the group that are probably have some more experience on a day-to-day basis in the operations and the culture, if that's the right word, and the practices of the secondary market. I know Bob, and I'm kind of just also looking in the direction of Simonetta here as well, but I'm wondering if it would be helpful if maybe the two of you maybe even reach out to Mr. Kirikos, our former member, once again, and put together some ideas of what would be an acceptable, appropriate, and secure method of transferring domain names or transacting domain names that didn't open up security holes for the folks who did not wish to participate in the secondary market. I wonder if that would be something you might want to give some thought to and put down in some comments. I don't mean to draft people, but I think that we're fortunate to have you on the group since, we've been accused, I think, in the comment periods or by some former members of the group of not getting it when it comes to what the impact of this would be on the secondary market. So maybe some education is in order, and maybe you can help some of us understand. Any thoughts on that? Or
yeah, James, can I respond to that?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'd be happy to do that. I think George, the only scary thing about George is the volume of information he'll get back. But, I'd be happy to talk with him and, Simonetta, happy to kind of loop you in as well and get his feedback. I know he has lots and lots of feedback, but he's definitely got some good stuff there.
Yeah, I see that, and Barry did point out that he did raise the idea of an irrevocable transfer, which, I think some might suggest that that's what we have currently. But some clarity on this from the other side of the mirror, if I can borrow that again, recognizing that in a perfect world, there would be a separate mechanism to transact domain names that is completely decoupled from a registrant who wants to vote with their feet and move from registrar A to registrar B, and that those would be distinctly separate processes.
No problem. Happy to sign up for that.
Okay, and we'll jump into Michael, and then we'll close the queue and move on to, I don't know if we want to dive into Section A, but we can discuss the last point on our agenda. Michael? Michael, you may be on mute.
Sorry about that. I thought I was unmuting, but I guess I was muted. First, I wanted to say that a separate process to transfer registrants would be advantageous. I particularly like the one at GoDaddy, by the way, and would be happy to suggest that something like that be used as an alternative to having to use a registrant transfer to facilitate a registrant change. But that's what we have today, and so we have to use what we have. I respectfully would like to disagree with Mikey. I do not think that, as it stands currently, there is any ICANN dispute resolution procedure or policy that would allow an EPRT to be resolved, an EPRT to be reversed. If there is, I'd like to see it and see how it would work. But I tried to write one. I realized that I think that the comment that Barbara made, that it would require change to the TDRP, is correct. I think for us to facilitate or for us to modify an existing dispute resolution procedure to be able to work hand-in-hand with the EPRP would require change to the TDRP. And in any case, I'm pretty sure, as it's written now, there's a reversal, a transfer reversal, could not be disputed by a losing registrant. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Michael. Mikey, a quick response?
Yeah,
want to kind of wind down here.
Yeah, and I think what we need to do is we all need to educate ourselves about the context of the rapid return thing. I just disagree with Michael on that one, and I think what we need to do is dig back in, re-educate ourselves on what this thing is and what context it's in, and we'll resolve it. It's something we can get through, I'm sure, but I think that's the problem. There's just a lot of misinformation out there, and either I'm wildly mistaken or Michael is, and we can arm wrestle.
Well, you're missing the possibility that we all are mistaken.
No, I'm sure that somebody here has it right.
Well, I'm continuously amazed at how many times you walk into a situation and nobody knows what's going on. Whether that's business politics, or life. I will go to Marika next.
Yeah, this is Marika. I just want to point out to the group that, following review of the comments, and I'm sure we're going to have a lot of discussion on the ETRP, that, at some point down the road, the group might want to consider as well, alternative avenues in moving that issue forward. Because, if there are indeed links or issues that might need to be done in the TDRP, as how it links to the ETRP, that might require a separate process. So, if this group feels that more time needs to be spent on working out a model and, doing testing, that, again, might be appropriate to, propose as a separate kind of effort. So I just want to make sure as well that, this group doesn't feel overwhelmed by having to deliver the perfect, policy or procedure. There are other ways in the future to see how that could be implemented or, for example, get some groups or get staff to write a proposal and, test that further, have comments and develop a separate strand on trying to put it into practice if the group feels it cannot come to, a solution that covers all the angles or might require a review or a modification of procedures or policies that are actually not part of the remit of this working group at this stage.
Yeah, certainly, Marika. I mean, one of the options for this group would, in its final report, would be to make a recommendation of something to the effect of, we've identified this as an issue, but we have not been able to achieve consensus on how to solve it, and maybe break out or extract some of the key points and then convene a group that's focused just on that particular issue. So we're now down to less than less than 10 minutes remaining for our allotted time. I'd like to wrap up the conversation on general comments, item 1, 2, and 3, and make a note for the next meeting, which I'm sure McKelly will really appreciate, that we're ready to dive into the substance of the ETRP comments. Perhaps, we got a taste of that today, and what I would just maybe put out as a suggestion is that the group individually and as a group that we kind of take a step back from this issue. We know it's controversial. We know that a lot of folks are looking at one or more particular elements of this proposal that they like, they don't like, they hate, that's got to be stopped, it's evil, whatever. And, you know, maybe if we can kind of decouple that from our discussion, because I think that there are some new folks on the group that maybe don't have visibility to how many months we spent hatching those issues out, some successfully, some, you know, decidedly with a lot of loose ends. And maybe if we can take a more strategic perspective on ETRP, and this goes back to what Marika was saying, where do we go with this? You know, I think that there is consensus that something is wrong and something might be useful to fix it. And, you know, we don't necessarily need to dive in and wrestle with all the devils and all the details at this point if we aren't prepared to make a recommendation that's airtight. So maybe if we could just kind of step back and, you know, take a strategic look at this. Are there elements of it that are salvageable? I mean, I think one thing that seemed to be popular was the idea that the optional 60-day lock after a transfer should possibly be required to prevent any hijacked names from bouncing around registrars every other day. I mean, that's, you know, just I'm putting that out there as one possible example of a small thing that is just given passing mention in the ETRP, which might be something worth discussing on its own. So, you know, that's just my opinion on how to approach the next call, because my concern is that item 4 through, I'm not sure how far it goes, 4 through 28 could take, you know, several months, and I'm sure no one wants to be doing this every Tuesday through Christmas. So with that, I'll just I see Paul's hand up, so go ahead, Paul.
Thanks, James. Could I just take it a step further and make it a little clearer? I totally support what you're saying. How do the rest of the folks in the working group feel? Can we, in the next call, jump to, I guess it's item 29, charter questions B, C, D, and E? Let's skip A for the time being, because I think the others are pretty straightforward, the proverbial low-hanging fruit. I'd hate to see momentum in this group get, you know, that we get bogged down going back and forth on particular things in ETRP, in particular when folks have, if you will, homework, they're going to reach out, they're going to put their heads together. That's going to take a little time. Let's focus on the other ones, knock them out, and then come back around to A when we're really ready to hash out. And understand, we're not blowing it off. I absolutely want to go back to it. Also underscore that this was our initial report. The policy that was proposed was a draft. It was meant to solicit comments. We're getting those. The policy process is actually working here. But I just hate to see this group slow down, get bogged down. Let's just jump to questions B, C, D, and E in the next call, and then we'll circle around to A once we're done with we've collected all the low-hanging fruit.
Paul, I think that's an amazingly astute suggestion. I see a lot of folks in the chat room and with the check marks supporting that. I support that. I guess, is anybody opposed to that? Okay. I think it's pretty I think it's pretty clear that that's the best path forward. You don't want to start a marathon by running through a quicksand. I'll pass that along, Marika, if we can maybe capture that for McKelly, that we want to start with item number 29 and go through those, setting ETRP aside while we gather additional information and, you know, hopefully get some more work done on some of these other topics. Okay. Are there any final comments or suggestions here? We've got 2 minutes left in the call, and it's an open floor before we adjourn. The queue is clear, and the time is up. So thank you, everyone, and have a great Tuesday or afternoon or evening.
Thanks, James.
Thanks, James.
Good night.
Bye.
Thanks. Bye.